Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is the first canto, chapter 13, texts number 32 and 33. So, 32 is on the board. Yeah, let's do 32. Tatra Sanjayam Asinam. Tatra sanjayam asinam praprachodvigna manasaha praprachodvigna manasaha gavagne kune kva nas tato gavagne kva nas Tato Vridho Hinas Cha Netrayo Vridho Hinas Cha Netrayo Tatras Sanjayam Asinam Prapyo Chodvigna Manasana Asaha Saha Gavalgane Kva Nastato Ridhohinas Chanitrayo Tatra Sanjayam Asinam Prapo Chodvigna Manasana Gavalgane Kva Nastato Vridohinas chanetrayo Tatra sanjayam asinam Prapachodvigna manasaha Gavalgane kva nastato Vridohinas chanetrayo Asinam Asaha Nene Vasadasmo Vaishnavis. Asinam. Prapochodvigna manasaha. Gavalgane kva nastato. Vrito hinascha netrayo. Tatra sanjayam asinam. prapachodvigna manasaha gavalgane kva nastato vidohinascha netrayo tatra there sanjayam unto sanjaya asinam seated prapyacha he inquired from Udvigna Manasaha, filled with anxiety. Gavalgane, the son of Gavalgana, Sanjaya. Kwa, where is? Na, our. Tata, uncle. Vridha, old. Hinaha, cha, and benefit of, bereft of, netrayo, the eyes. Translation, Maharaj Yudhisthira, full of anxiety, turned to Sanjaya, who was seated there, and said, O Sanjaya, where is our uncle, who is old and blind? Text 33. Amba chahatta putartha Pitivya kva katta suit api maya kritta prajne hatta bandhu sabaryaya asam samana samalam gangayam dukito patat. Where is my well wisher, Uncle Vidura, and Mother Gandhari, who is very afflicted due to all her son's demise? My uncle Dhritarashtra was also very mortified due to the death of his sons and grandsons. Undoubtedly, I am very ungrateful. Did he, therefore, take my offenses very seriously and, along with his wife, drown himself in the Ganges? Purport. The Pandavas, especially Maharaj Yudhisthira and Arjuna, anticipated the after effects of the battle of Kurukshetra, and therefore Arjuna declined to execute the fighting. The fight was executed by the will of the Lord, but the effects of family aggrievement, as they had thought of it before, had come to be true. Maharaj Yudhisthira was always conscious of the great plight of his uncle Dhritarashtra and aunt Gandhari, and therefore he took all possible care of them in their old age and aggrieved conditions. When, therefore, he could not find his uncle and aunt in the palace, naturally his doubts arose. He conjectured that they had gone down to the water of the Ganges. He thought of himself ungrateful because when the Pandavas were fatherless, Maharaj Dhritarashtra had given them all royal facilities to live, and in return, he had killed all Dhritarashtra's sons in the battle of Kurukshetra. As a pious man, Maharaj Yudhisthira took into account all his unavoidable misdeeds, and he never thought of the misdeeds of his uncle and company. Dhritarashtra had suffered the effects of his own misdeeds by the will of the Lord, but Maharaj Yudhisthira was thinking only of his own unavoidable misdeeds. That is the nature of a good man and a devotee of the Lord. A devotee never finds fault with others, but tries to find his own and thus rectify them as far as possible. Om Gyana Tamaranda Sya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshus Ulmanitamena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sapitamena Bhutale Swayamupukadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakopa Tubhischa, Kripasindhu Bhivacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Okay, the verses again. Maharaj Yudhisthira, full of anxiety, turned to Sanjaya, who was sitting there. He said, O Sanjaya, where's our uncle who's old and blind? Where's my well-wisher, Uncle Vidura and Mother Gandhari, who is very afflicted due to her son's demise? My uncle Dhritarashtra was also very mortified due to the death of all his sons and grandsons. Undoubtedly, I'm very ungrateful. Did he, therefore, take my offenses very seriously and, along with his wife, drown himself in the Ganges? So Prabhupada mentions here, this is the nature of a good man, Yudhisthira, who's a great king. And we find this among great leaders, that they're very concerned about others. It's not about themselves, but it's about others. So today I'd like to focus on two words here that are mentioned. And one is on ungratefulness and fault finding. These are two big topics, and they're brought up in these particular verse. So I'd like to go into those two different words. So first of all, we're seeing here Dhritarashtra and what happens when a living entity desires comfort for his body. And this is from the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, and this is from the 7th canto, chapter 7, text 43, and a couple of verses after that. And I'd like to just read those to give us the idea of what we were seeing, what Dhritarashtra went through. A living entity desires comfort for his body and makes many plans for this purpose. But actually the body is the property of others. Indeed, the perishable body embraces the living entity and then leaves him aside. Prabhupada says in a short purport, everyone desires comfort for his body and tries to make a suitable situation for this purpose, forgetting that the body is meant to be eaten by dogs, jackals, or moths, and thus turn into useless stool, ashes, or earth. We see this is going to happen to Dhritarashtra's body. He's going to burn it. The living entity wastes his time in the futile attempt to gain material possessions for the comfort of one's body or another. And then in the next verse, Prahlad Maharaj says, since the body itself is ultimately meant to become stool or earth, what is the meaning of the paraphernalia related to the body, such as wives, residence, wealth, children, relatives, servants, friends, kingdoms, treasuries, animals, and ministers? They are all temporary. What more can be said about this? So this is Dhritarashtra was very attached to all these things, his children, his land, his wealth, his position, his chair. And then let's read one more. This is text 45. All this paraphernalia is very near and dear as long as the body exists. But as soon as the body is destroyed, all things related to the body are also finished. Therefore, actually, one has nothing to do with them. But because of ignorance, one accepts them as valuable. Compared to an ocean of eternal happiness, they are most insignificant. What is the use of such insignificant relationships for the eternal living being? And Prabhupada gives another short, very nice purport. Krishna consciousness, devotional service to Krishna, is the ocean of eternal bliss. In comparison to this eternal bliss, the so-called happiness of society, friendship, and love is simply useless and insignificant. One should therefore not be attached to temporary things. One should take to Krishna consciousness and become eternally happy. So this is what happened to Dhritarashtra. He actually became... what's the word here that Prabhupada uses? I don't know if it's in the previous verse. Got him. That's one of them, yeah. But this kind of refers to all the activities that he actually became a transcendentalist, a sadhu. I forget the word here. But he actually did that. So he didn't just have the knowledge from his brother, from his younger brother, but he actually acted on it. Yeah, so he acted on that, the Vijnana. So he actually did something. So this is, we shouldn't just collect knowledge and then just save it. Like, you know, you could have a hard drive of all Prabhupada's books on you, but if you don't actually apply them or live them, what is the use? Just carrying them around. So we have to actually try to really understand this philosophy. So let's go to some more notes that I have on these two topics. So, gratitude, this is the upachitam. And today you see a lot of people talking about this gratitude. And actually many scientists and psychologists are studying this, and they're finding it has many, many benefits. Actually, in the Vedas, it gives us all these things, but they have to go out and study and find out from the school of hard knocks. But it has a very transformative power, this gratitude. So there's these colleagues, they're called this positive psychology. They did a scientific study on emotions, on gratitude, optimism, forgiveness, happiness, all these qualities of a devotee. And they found some very interesting things. Usually they were focusing on the negative psychology, like mental illness, trauma, all these different things, and stress. So then they started to study these positive things, and this is what they found. So they said that gratitude is our emotion that relates to our ability to feel and express thankfulness and appreciation. So usually this is like theology, related to theology, but now they're trying to see through the lens of psychology. So he says here, he found that expressing gratitude improves mental, physical, and relational well-being. Being grateful also impacts the overall experience of happiness, and these effects tend to be long-lasting. So here's some of the things he says here. These are all the benefits of just this one quality. And we know there's many qualities of a devotee, so we could spend all day just describing the beautiful, activities of a devotee. So this is one: improved physical, emotional, and social well-being, greater optimism and happiness, improved feelings of connection in times of loss or crisis, increased self-esteem, heightened energy levels, strengthened heart, immune system, and decreased blood pressure, improved emotional and academic intelligence, expanded capacity for forgiveness, decreased stress, anxiety, depression, and headaches, improved self-care and greater likeness to exercise, heightened spirituality, able to see something bigger than ourselves. That's very important. So they mention a lot of ideas on how to develop this gratitude. One of the favorite ones is you develop a gratitude journal. Like you write at least three positive things that happened to you today. Or you're going to focus on some things that you're going to do today that are positive. So if they said that if someone does this just for 2 weeks, that it has a cumulative effect, and it could last for up to 6 months. But they found an interesting thing. Let's see what they said here. They give you ideas on this journal, and there's a meditation. You sit down, you meditate, be grateful, and you try to think about what are you grateful for. So this is very important. We have to think about that. And Prabhupada talks about that, how we should be so grateful for the gifts that Krishna has given us. Everything's so out there, free air, water, all these things were given. We should be very grateful. So this is an interesting thing that they found out, that negative experiences are like Velcro and tend to stick in our minds, whereas positive experiences are like Teflon and more readily slip away. So this is why Prabhupada says that we have to actively work. We have to actually constantly rehear and chant, because these positive things seem to slip away. And there was a very stalking example that I heard of a true story. A woman had Alzheimer's disease. She couldn't remember who she was, who her family was. But you know what she did remember? She couldn't forget how her husband cheated on her. Because she was holding this resentment, this negative, thing about her husband. And that's the one thing that she couldn't forget. Couldn't even remember who she was, her own self-identity. But yet she remembered this negative thing. So these negative things stick like Velcro. So we have to be very careful. And we'll go into more about that. So this is what scientific study that's being done. But what is our spiritual references? Actually, it was listing all the qualities of Krishna. Like there's only 40 listed, but we know he has more in this one purport. And one of them is gratefulness. And this was one of the five things of knowledge, which is gratefulness. There's many other things that are mentioned. And I could, just a few of those, I'll mention those here while we're at it. So it says this is one of the 14th qualities of Krishna, which was knowledge. And then it says here it can be divided further into five subheadings, which is intelligence, gratefulness, power of understanding the circumstantial environment of place, object, and time, perfect knowledge of everything, and knowledge of the self. And it says here, Prabhupada in the purport, only fools are ungrateful to their benefactors. But Krishna, he doesn't need anything, but yet when we do give him something, he's so grateful. He's a very grateful person. So let's see what some more scriptural references are here. So this is Prabhupada describes in a purport here, even though a sadhu is not inimical towards anyone, the world is so ungrateful that even a sadhu has many enemies. And this was described as like we see King Yudhisthira, many great saints and many holy people throughout history like Jesus Christ. Even though, what was their fault? They were devotees of God. What was Prahlad Maharaj's fault? He was a devotee. He wanted to become a devotee. But yet, his father was so mean and wicked that he wouldn't even let him practice Krishna consciousness at home. You see. So there's no fault in the sadhu, actually. And then here it's really nicely described. Let's see what the reference is for that one. This is from The Killing of the Demon Hiranyakashipu, 3rd Canto, 19th Chapter, Text 36. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says here, I'll just read the purport. Ungrateful persons are those who do not understand how much benefit they are deriving by the arrangement of the Lord. They enjoy the sunshine and moonshine, and they get water free of charge, yet they do not feel grateful, but simply go on enjoying these gifts of the Lord. Therefore, they must be called thieves and rogues. So we've seen throughout history that even Ajamil, the story in the Bhagavatam, after he saw the Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas, he realized his position and he said, I have left my pious parents who were old and helpless, and I'm so ungrateful for them that I left them. I even left my chaste wife. So he was showing this regret, how ungrateful he was. And we see the result of his ungratefulness. And that's actually caused by sinful activity. Because of his sinful activities, he wasn't able to have this quality of gratefulness. This is all described throughout the literatures. And we even see Indra. He was so puffed up and proud when his spiritual master entered the arena. He didn't even stand up. He was just so ungrateful. And that's why the demigods are actually defeated by the demons, because of that offense of ungratefulness to the spiritual master. So there's many things that can happen due to ungratefulness. It's very, very powerful. So let's go into the next one, which this is fault finding, which is Kutinati. And just a few quotes from Chanaka Pandit. Those base men who speak of the secret faults of others destroy themselves like serpents who stray onto anthills. Another one. Mental dirt cannot be washed away even by 100 baths in sacred waters, just as wine pot cannot be purified by evaporating all the wine by fire. Again, just see how negativity sticks like Velcro. Chanakapana says you cannot wash it away by 100 baths in sacred waters, or by evaporating it with fire. This is mental dirt. It's so important because we need to understand this. I heard that Burijan Prabhu in one of his Japa retreats, he was talking how important it is to not fault find. Because if you fault find with anyone, actually Krishna takes it personally. So here we are trying to chant Hare Krishna. And even when we're chanting, we're finding fault with the devotee, or looking around and finding fault in so many different things. So he gave them a practice. He said, put a rubber band on one hand, on one wrist, and while you're chanting during the retreat, if you catch yourself finding fault with someone, then you take it off and put it on the other one, and then you see how many times you do that, and you just see how many times we fault find. I heard another technique was that every time you have like a bad thought or something like that, you actually stretch it out and psh. But that's more like a Christian idea, punish yourself. But yeah, so this is very important. So there's a quote here from the Madhya Lila, and this is where the cleansing of the Gundicha temple, Madhya Lila 12. And this is from the verse 135 purport. And this is where Bhaktisiddhanta explains that even though we may become free, like you're cleansing the temple, you know, but Lord Chaitanya wanted to clean outside the temple also. So we may think that, you know, we are pure of heart, right? But yet we have, he says here, one often thinks of conducting business to improve devotional activity, but the contamination is so strong that it may later develop into misunderstanding, described as kuti nati, fault finding. And then he mentions a few other things, like pratishta, desire for name and fame or high position, jiva himsa, envy to other living entities, which he describes very nicely as stopping the preaching program. And nisidachara, accepting things forbidden in the shastra, kama, desire for material gain, and puja, hankering for popularity. So this kutinanti means that duplicity. So, and then we have, there's a nice, another reference by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He talks about this. Let's look up that reference. So this is from Bhaktivinoda's Vani Vaibhava, the desire for material fame, why it is improper to proudly identify oneself as a Vaishnava. And this is number 72, cheating propensity. So he talks about, what is kutinati and what is its result? I guess someone's asking a question. So he describes here, the phrase kutinati has two words, kuti and nati. Persons who have a mania for cleanliness always find ku, or bad in everything. What do they call that? People have this, OCD. What is it called? Obsessive compulsive disorder, yeah. Yeah, so this is a person mania for cleanliness. So in other words, they take a bath in a pond, and since there's a place for passing stew next to that pond, they always think bad about the pond and spend their whole day in discussing about this. They cannot discuss any good subject matters. Mania for cleanliness is an example of kutinati. Those who are afflicted by this cannot think of any place in the whole world as pure, cannot think any time as auspicious, and cannot accept any person as a pure Vaishnava. When they see any activity of a pure devotee which is opposed to the principles of the smartas, they immediately disassociate with such a pure devotee by considering him a non-Vaishnava. This is an example of nati, or negation. To not accept the remnants of the deity form of the Lord installed by the devotees from the lower caste is also an example of kutinati. As long as kutinati is prominent in one, he cannot achieve any happiness from eating any foodstuffs. Kutinati is one kind of mental disease. As long as one is influenced by this, it is very difficult to achieve devotional service to Krishna. For a person who is influenced by kutinanti, it is extremely difficult to serve and associate with the Vaishnavas. To see how powerful that is. And then, let's see here. So there's another thing. He quotes Lord Chaitanya that in the course of Sriman Mahaprabhu's instructions regarding giving up kutinanti, he has enlisted activities like committing sinful activities, violence towards other living entities, and desire for fame, material fame, are detrimental to devotional service as kutinati. And then Mahaprabhu explains the meaning of the word. E bala e manda. Or this is good and this is bad. So we're always seeing, you know, like we see that. And then how do people afflicted by kutinati become offenders to the holy names and the Vaishnavas? Here he describes, due to their pride for caste and beauty, people who are afflicted by kutinati do not have firm faith in the remnants of the Lord's foodstuffs. in the water that has washed the feet of the Vaishnavas, in the dust from the feet of the Vaishnavas. Therefore, there are always offenders at the feet of the holy names of the Vaishnavas. It is impossible for such people to chant the holy names of the Lord. There are some people who hate the pure Vaishnavas when those Vaishnavas are in distress. But Mahaprabhu has said, O Sanatan, the Vaishnavas do not hate you because you have scabies in your body. So then, that's nice. It just goes on. From Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So let's see what we have. So here's some quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is referring to Prahlad Maharaj. And Prabhupada, as I mentioned, devotees, they have no fault, but yet people find fault and then they crucify them. And then here's a real nice Mahaprabhu's advice to Srila Das Goswami. It says Srila Das Goswami. I don't know who that is. Maybe Sanatana Goswami. So he quotes all these nice Sanskrit words or whatever. And then he says here, he's given him, you know, don't talk worldly, don't wear fancy clothes, you know, be humble, all these things. So this is one he says here. Translation. The wicked mind, which is never to be trusted, should be broomsticked every morning with such warnings as, quote, be not anxious to find fault with others, or to proclaim thyself as a true, sincere, bona fide bhakta, which certainly thou art not. End quote. In this connection, the advice of a Vaishnava Mahajana is this. And he quotes this beautiful song. They might be in Bengali, I'm not sure. I won't chant those. Here's a translation. Be not attached to karmis, gyanis, and bhaktas false, but pure unalloyed bhajan you should always endorse. Follow principles which Raja folk adopt, these being valued truths to be kept aloft. So then, I guess this is like his purport or whatever. The mind is always working erroneously in looking upon this thing or that, either as good or bad. The Charitamrita sings, have you heard of the Charitamrita? Sings, Dvaita Barabhadra Jana Sabhamano Dharma. People are usually too much busy with mental speculations. They should relieve themselves of this and try to find out the real good in their own selves or souls. There is an adage to the fact that para karachakera gati nahi kona kale. Quote, a man who is habituated to criticize others' conduct will never prosper. End quote. So he says, let others do what they like. I have no concern with them. I should rather find fault with my own damned mind and think like the Vaishnava Mahajan who sings, Amara Jivan Sara Papevata Nahi Punyera Lesa. Ever engaged in vicious activity and without the slightest trace of virtue in me, a liar as I am, always sorrow at others' pleasures and merry at others' sorrows, troubles, and cares. So just one more thing he says. We should always remember this song and engage our minds ceaselessly in Hari Bhajan. We should not run about attacking others with dissuading policy. Such conduct behooves only deceitful persons and not preachers. So then he talks about the way of the karmis and gyanis, how they will lead us to immense troubles and difficulties. And he says that they engage all their attention in considering shadowy, transient things. And we were reading, beginning how these transient things, like even anything material practically, people are so concerned about them. So he says here, the Satchitananda Vigraha, the ever-existing joyful conscious entity, Krishna, of whom everything visible is a mere shadow, the gross archaeologist is too much busy with ascertaining of material ingredient of idols, which may be either of stone or wood or any other material. There are some who work as iconographers or iconoclasts, while there are others who are busy in ascertaining the amount of filth or impurities accumulated in a particular soil. But none of them ever cares to find out or measure the impurities of their own minds. There's no attempt on their part to weed out the undesirable element in their mind, though such an attempt is of paramount importance in their own personal interest. So that's pretty good. So there's so many things that are said. And if you look at Bhakti Chirta Swami's books, he talks about this very nicely. So many examples and situations that we find ourselves in and how we have to really think about this false pride and these things. And how he says here, unless one is unalloyed devotee, he cannot serve Krishna. And without serving Guru, he cannot become an unalloyed devotee. There is no other way for the conditioned souls to become delivered except to serve the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. So therefore, it's very important that we have to be careful how we think of the Vaishnavas. So this is another song. And it's very nice. I think this is by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Let's see what the reference says. Oh no, this is from the Adi Kanta, Chaitanya Bhagavat, 269. Actually, no, I think this is a different one. Yeah, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. It's entitled Bogus Ecstatic Symptoms. And there's five verses. I'll just read the translations. It starts off with Mana tori bolo e barata. My dear mind, I have this message to convey to you. Alas, how remorseful is it that you have sold your own independence due to being cheated by deviant rascals who turn you away from the process of spiritual life given to you by your guru. At your tender, immature stage of spiritual realization, you foolishly think or listen to such cheaters only to be misled from the true path. Verse 2. You now have a new talent for fault finding with the society of the devotees and the whole disciplic succession as well. Constantly remembering these supposed faults that you find, you very carefully try to purify yourself, wearing neck beads no longer, marking your forehead with tilak no longer. You have now made up your own new set of rules and regulations. You have rejected your initiating spiritual master, Diksha Guru, because you now experience his influence as a burning sensation in your heart. Wow. Text number 3, or verse 3. Dear mind, you artificially agree with your former philosophy, but you really don't accept or follow it. Instead, you broadcast your own whimsical concoctions just to establish yourself as some sort of incarnation. Trying to find mistakes in the devotional process established by great devotees, you completely toss out your previous spiritual path as rubbish, neglecting all your former vows and practices. Verse 4. You have become most displeased because you think that tilak, initiation, and neck beads are accepted only by sly, cunning cheaters. You become angry when you find some insignificant fault with the process of the great souls, and thus you reject all attachment to the path. The last verse. Now just see here, my dear brother, your present life as well as your future life are at stake. You have renounced pure gold simply to take some worthless ashes. You say that everyone else is bogus, but if you don't accept the true process of devotional service, then how will you be delivered at the time of your death? You see, this is going on rampantly on the internet now, isn't it? People blasting devotees and this movement. So there's so many more things to go on here. It's already 8:20. But let me just see if I could end with something that you will remember besides these two words. Here's an interesting, it kind of ties it in here. People often have difficulties with gratitude because they cannot forgive. This is from Bhakti Chirta Swami, I think. Since they keep themselves too exclusively in the center, they will repeatedly reflect on the way another person spoke or acted towards them, and consequently they feel that pain over and over again. However, those who deeply honor the existence of others not only forgive, but they even sometimes place the responsibility on themselves. They consider that their own actions have caused the other person to respond in a negative way. Therefore, they apologize to the other person for their own insufficiencies. Not only do they relinquish all grudges, but they also find themselves to be at fault or focus on their own improvements. So that ties in both words, gratitude and fault finding. So let's end there and maybe open up for any discussion because it's getting late. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for the wonderful class. I was actually listening to something yesterday by Madhava Ananda Prabhu in relation to this topic.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking kind of on the point of gratitude. And he was mentioning how, you know, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he would be walking around Navadweep, and this one time children started throwing stones at him. And then he started, like, chastising Krishna, like, Krishna, stop doing that, or I'll go tell your mother. And he saw it like that. So he wasn't seeing these kids acting in such a way where they're, like, trying to hurt him. He wasn't criticizing the kids for acting. He saw it just simply coming from Krishna. And so similarly, I was reflecting on your class in relation to that point that, you know, when we find fault in ourself, it allows us to be grateful for others because we see that they're just acting on behalf of Krishna for
exactly.
our own purification.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with who they are. It's
yeah.
it's for our own well-being. So whether it's positive or negative according to our short-sighted mentality, if we can understand that it's coming from Krishna,
yeah.
then it can become such a beautiful thing, and that's really the root of gratitude. If we're really developing love for Krishna and we're seeing things coming from Krishna,
sure.
then we'll actually be grateful.
Yeah, thank you. Very good. That's kind of what I was trying to bring across in the class today. Yes, Bhrigupati Prabhu.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhu. Isn't there a place for corrective criticism, though? I mean, I'll give you an example. Like back in around like 1984 or 5, there was a big problem in the society. And, you know, a lot of top leaders were having difficulties in their spiritual life. It was manifesting in how they managed their responsibilities, and a lot of devotees were being affected by that. Now, if everybody would have responded to that by, you know, seeing, well, this is a problem now, but must be, let me look at my own faults and not look at their faults, or let me not say anything because I don't want to criticize. You know, things might not have changed. I mean, things might have just, fortunately, some people didn't do that, and they spoke out and they said, no, this is a problem here, you know, and we need yeah. to address it. So it seems to me that, you know, that attitude is good. That definitely should be there. We should always be trying to see what are our own faults and correct them. But at the same time, it seems to me that you got to be like, have 2 feet on the ground and see, call a spade sometimes. I think there's some
yeah.
quote, I can't remember, it goes to the effect that all that's required for evil to prevail in human society is that the good people don't do anything about it. Something like that. You know,
yeah.
It seems like there's some merit to that to me.
Yeah, so there's two things. We're talking about fault finding, and then there's constructive criticism. That's two different things. So, and Archidai wants to chide into, but let me just mention something. It reminded me of a couple of stories. I mean, of course, we know Prabhupada. I mean, it's important for a disciple to go to someone he respects and trusts, and that loves him and he loves them, to get some constructive criticism so they can improve. It's important. So this is what the spiritual master is for. And there's a story I heard about Niranjana Swami when he was a temple president in Boston. He used to chastise the devotees, but he would be laughing, like he would, you know. And so nobody took him serious. They called him the laughing whip. So nobody took him serious. So then he decided that, I have to actually make a show of anger, like, you know, the snake that's pretending to bite because everyone's mistreating. So in that way, you have to, it's important. So let's hear what Archita has to say.
No, Bhrigupati Prabhu brought up a good point.
Yeah.
You cannot stop seeing. It's just like people like to say, don't judge. You can't stop judging. It's part of being conscious. But how you
yeah.
act on your judgment, first of all, make sure you're seeing what you actually think you're seeing.
Yeah.
And the problem is when you're in illusion, you sometimes think you see things that are not there.
It's true.
So first of all, make sure you see what you're seeing, you think you're seeing.
Yeah.
And then go about it in the prescribed way. Don't act on whimsically. In other words, for instance, we have a bhakti program. We have new devotees here. Yes, they're going to make mistakes, but it's not on everybody to chastise them. There's a bhakti leader. If you see a bhakti doing something that you think is not appropriate, go to the bhakti leader. If everybody in the community thinks they have the right to chastise the bhaktas, then they're just going to get discouraged and go away. So there's always a prescribed way of doing things. Follow that prescribed way. And especially when you think you see fault in somebody who is in a higher ranking position, it's not your position to chastise them. You find somebody who's higher than them and give them the responsibility. Say, hey, I saw so-and-so Maharaj, you know, coming out of a bar last night. Maybe you can find out whether he was preaching or he was like drinking. Don't take it upon yourself to go to Maharaj and say, hey, Maharaj, why are you in that bar? It's not your position. So there's always a prescribed way of doing things. Follow the prescribed way and things will run smoothly. But if everybody thinks they have the right to chastise everybody else, that's when things fall apart. And the whole thing becomes a very big, you know, cesspool. Becomes a mess. So, yes, keep your eyes open. You must. Just like I'll give you a concrete example. In New York, where I joined, when a certain devotee went down, he married this woman who, you know, he left the sannyas, married this woman, and she started eating meat. And supposedly even offered meat to the deities. So when the whole thing came to Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, as far as the rank and file devotees go, I don't blame them for what happened. But you as the leaders, you're speaking to the leaders, this GBC and others, you should have done something immediately. You should have seen and you should have done something. So as a rank and file devotee, if you see something happening, yes, keep your eyes open, go and report it to the right person and give them the duty to do it. Don't take it upon yourself to chastise everybody else and everybody chastise you. Then it becomes just a big mess.
Yeah. Should be glad it's not your service. Right? Don't be a self-appointed. Yes, Samar? Over here? Let's have Madhaji this time, and then we'll come back to you.
Thank you for a very wonderful, insightful class.
Thank you.
Since 1984, and I remember those times clearly, so many things have been put in place in order for us to have checks and balances. Like there's a sannyas ministry, there's a waiting list to become a sannyasi, there's a guru disciple course that you're supposed to take before you can even become a disciple of a guru. There's all kinds of qualifications and books written and information compiled from the shastras about what a guru is.
Sure.
You know, so, and we didn't even have any of that in those days. So it was like a recipe for, you know, problems. So, but it's true. We should go to those ministries or those personalities in order to voice a concern.
Exactly. Thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Prabhu, for the wonderful class. So regarding the topic about fault finding, it reminds me of one lecture by my Guru Maharaj, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. You know, he was saying that, first of all, we have to find fault with ourselves. And he said, you know, unless we are a pure devotee of the Lord, we should not find fault with the others. First of all, we have to find fault with us.
Yes. And Yudhishthira was a perfect example, huh? Yudhishthira Maharaj. Well, Maharaj has something.
Thank you for a very nice class.
Hi.
Just one minor point on this point of fault finding. We have to always be aware of the fact is that why do we find fault? I mean, what is the basis of it?
Because there's fault in yourself.
It is the very reason that we've come into this material world, which is to be a lord. And when you find fault, it means you're picking on something of a person in such a way that you are saying, in effect, that he's worthless, or she has no smarts. She's not intelligent because she has done this and that, and not like me because I would not do that. So in other words, it's like putting yourself in a position of superiority.
Yeah.
And it is that superiority, which is the sense of lordship, that enables people to go on building their false ego and thinking that by building the false ego and feeling happy, this is a false happiness. And false happiness is the basis of real fall down.
Sure. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for your kind attention. Hokoreshu Srimad Bhagavatam. Hokoreshu Srila Prabhupada.